This is PS You Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate, hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Oh, shoot. I was...
What?
Damn it. I fudged this. Okay, wait. Let me regroup here for a second. Her hair is hollow gold. Her lips are sweet. Surprise.
What's happening?
Are you not getting this reference?
No.
You haven't watched JoJo Siwa perform Betty Davis Eyes on TikTok?
Okay. No, I saw a clip of it. I did. I saw a clip of it. I think you talked about it last week, too. This has been living in your head rent-free all week.
Oh, my gosh. It's so bad. It's so bad. It's so bad. But they were playing... I was at the Jersey Shore this weekend, and they were literally playing a remixed version of it at the bar. Like, that's how bad it was. And I'm... obsessed with JoJo Siwa's continual weirdness, but
oh yeah. Well, did she start by saying like, "Oh, I messed this up"?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I didn't watch the whole thing. I was just trying to get the bit.
No, she just is really bad at singing it.
Oh yeah, I hear that. I've seen that. And
it's just
is it
like
because
this raspy voice?
Did she change the lyrics to her boyfriend's name, or was that a lie I saw on the internet?
I don't know. I have only listened to that one clip, which did not have the boyfriend's name in it, but you know, there's a whole song. Yeah. So
you couldn't even bother. You were like, no, this is enough. I think that was everyone too.
She sang it and then was like, people love this so much, like I'm gonna release the full version. But I did not like listen to the full version when it was on, obviously.
Is that true? Is she living in delusion, you think, or is she rage baiting?
I'm sure that her fans liked it. I think what happened is that she already had planned to release the full version.
Of course.
And it was just pretending like, oh, like, should I do it, you guys? Is that something you want? And
right.
It's like, okay, yeah. Like, you already recorded the whole thing. So it's coming out whether we want it or not.
Yeah. But do you think she's someone who's like very self-aware or like very dialed in to the people's opinions, or is she living in La La Land?
I think she's self-aware enough because I did see a video of her being like, oh, when someone plays me in the biopic, this is how they'll sing the song. And she was singing it like super, super raspy. So I think she's like following along enough that sometimes she gets the jokes, but I don't think that she's self-aware enough to sort of be like ahead of the curve at all and anticipate the things that aren't going to work. But also I think she's had such a long career of people being thinking that she's weird. Cause even like her, you know, when she starts and all of her like, oh, like rainbow pigtail kind of like everybody kind of energy. I think that she got a lot of negative feedback for that.
So I think
she's just used to like the haters hating.
Yeah, I mean, singing her way to the bank, you know, I guess. Yeah, she's grown up in it. I can't believe she's only 22. Like, poor girl.
I know, she's lived 1,000 lifetimes.
The internet's punching bag forever and always.
But also, the thing that I keep thinking about celebrities is how quick the celebrity cycle fades. Like, if she did not want to be a celebrity and she just wanted to be a normal person, I think that it would only take like 3 years and one haircut to kind of almost completely remove her from the zeitgeist, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course. But then she's been brainwashed since birth. She's had no chance to develop her own interests. She doesn't know anything but this life.
Right. No. And I do think that that is the problem with child actors and child stars and that kind of situation. But whenever these actors get, you know, super upset about things or influencers or whatnot, I'm like, if you did not want to do this, you would not have to do this. Yeah. Like, I think that somebody like Taylor Swift is a little bit of an exception because she's so famous that I don't think she could.
Once you reach a point.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that the vast majority of people could sort of pivot to a fairly anonymous lifestyle without too much effort. You know,
I mean, yeah, for sure. But I mean, culture these days is insane. I really don't have like a lot of stories this week, but I have sort of been on the sideline of like rage culture around, I don't know, reactions to people. Like, for instance, I don't watch Love Island, but I've consumed like, you know, a little bit here and there. And it's just like, so I get people reacting to the thing. So I don't always know the thing, but I know the reactions too. And I guess there's just been so much like vitriol against this cast for like good reasons or not. But like what's mesmerizing to me is that our celeb obsessed culture is merging with this sort of celeb hating culture. And so obviously this has always existed, but now we're also in a hyper-reactive, uber-connected space. And when you have a show like Love Island that's happening live, it's just like, it's wild to me how invested people get, not in loving something or liking something or the community around something, but in like making it your mission to destroy someone. Like, I do not get it. Like, the amount of apologies that people have had to come out with, not apologies, the amount of like warnings that people have had to come out with, like Love Island released a, this is a place of love, like, please don't hate us. And then The Summer I Turned Pretty preemptively is like, hey guys, this is supposed to be a fun show. If any of you start to like attack our actors or our writers, we're going to have to block you. And it's like, that's crazy that they have to like announce this, especially with a fictional show or with like, yeah, people just signing up to like entertain us. Like, obviously there's layers, right? Like, yes, they agreed to this. Yes, they know what they're getting into. It's part of being in the public, blah, blah, blah. But I just feel like there's something disturbing about this new era of engagement, because it's like, if I grew up watching Lost, loved the community of Lost or like Harry Potter or whatever, but I can't imagine ever being in the headspace where I'm like, oh my gosh, Jack is annoying the shit out of me, I'm going to go to this actor's personal, you know, Instagram account and let them know in the comments that I think they're a terrible person and that they deserve to die. And like, oh, fucking choke, you're ruining my favorite show. Like, I just can't imagine. And it just seems like that's what everyone is running into these days, is I don't know what it is. If it's like our accountability culture merging into this sort of like, I don't know, destruction for the entertainment. Like, it's very strange.
I mean, I think part of it, not that everybody who's in those comments is like a Gen Z person or a young person, because there's lots of internet trolls that are starting here. People.
Yeah.
But I do think like when we were watching Lost, our access to celebrity was so limited.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, some people had Twitter, but it's like when I was pissed off about Lost, there was nowhere to put that energy. Like, I could. I would complain with my friends about it, but yeah. I didn't get like
online forums.
Yes, there weren't. I couldn't go to J.J. Abrams, you know, Instagram feed and comment something mean on his post. Not that I would do that now or ever anyways, but there just like wasn't, you did not have that ability, where I think now we have been trained sort of as a society. Oh, if there is somebody that you don't like, if there's somebody who you think is doing something bad, you can go and sort of like bring it directly to the source in some way or not.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways that is good, because, you know, you see somebody who's like in not entertainment settings, but like in with politics and stuff, or, you know, like when that running influencer ran with, Caroline Levitt, it was like all the comments on all of her videos were like, how dare you do this? Like, you're platforming fascists, blah, blah, blah. And I think when that happened, I wasn't like, oh, but these are just running videos. Like, leave right. this girl alone, blah, 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 blah. I was like, no, like, this is good. Like, stand up for these beliefs.
Yeah.
I think that there are just people who, like, haven't quite figured out the nuances between, like, okay, this is standing up for something that's important, and this is just, like, bullying somebody who is kind of annoying who's on a TV show.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think that that yeah. is the difference.
I know.
So I, but
well, and I think we just need to bring back like private bitching, right? Like hate on someone, gossip on someone with your little personal bubble, or even in your stories, like, you know, make your own community on your Reddit thread, whatever. But what's wild to me is the assumptiveness of putting yourself in a space that they're directly engaged with, like whether that's in their TikTok comments or in their DMs. Like it's crazy to be like, I think you're a fugly cow to someone's digital face. And it's like, to what purpose? Like, what are like these Love Island contestants? I have no attachment to them. I'm sure that most of them are probably bad or shallow people at the very least. But it's like, what is breaking in our brains that we're like, you know what, this mean thought I have, it's not enough to just like react to the television and have a good, you know, laugh or vent about it with my work friends or online friends. No, I'm gonna go to the source and harass this person because I don't know, it's crazy. And then when you add the fandom to it and you have people like the Star Wars fans who are attacking cast members for their relationship to someone from 10 years ago. Like, it's like that stand-up is also very mesmerizing and kind of horrifying to me. And so, yeah, it's interesting to watch the like rage machine just like constantly churn out this kind of negative engagement, and how people are having to kind of like try and plan for it. Like the new Marvel show, they had to have Rotten Tomatoes go and delete the like review bombing again, or the Summer I Turned Pretty with their like announcement that maybe you guys shouldn't take this so seriously, please be nice. Like, that's crazy. It's like we're all kindergartners and we have to be reminded of the golden rule by these media conglomerates.
Yes, I mean, on one hand, with like reality stars and stuff and actors just in general, I think I feel bad for people who get put in these situations who are not trying to be in the public light. And obviously, I don't think that anybody should be doing anything physically, like going up to somebody when you see them on the street or, you know, showing up at their house, that kind of stuff, like always bad. I think with some of the reality TV show people and like actors and stuff, it's like, you should be able to anticipate this at this point and recognize like, okay, if you're going on Love Island, like you will probably be getting some like negative comments and things and DMs and whatever. And those are from crazy people online. You just have to sort of ignore them or block them out or whatnot. They're, especially I think with the case of Love Island, it's like in a month, I don't think anyone's going to be thinking about this. Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes people, though, go onto these shows or become famous thinking, oh, everyone is going to love me. Like, I am going to get all of this good attention. And then are completely blindsided when they're getting negative press out of this yeah. stuff. And I'm like, okay, we as a society are smart enough now that if you realize you're going on a reality TV show, you have to be prepared that people are going to potentially not like you. And you know,
I don't know if we're smart enough. I think we're getting dumber.
I mean, maybe, but like,
like for instance, like Love Island, like people are reacting and like vilifying these characters without acknowledging like the hand that production has in it, right? Like it's like you see an edit and you're frothing at the bit to react to this edit without actually knowing the full story. And like, that's, you know, that's like, I like, again, I have no skin in the game with them, but it's been fascinating to be like, oh, well, actually they released a longer cut and it shows this person was actually right about this thing that they were vilified for. And so I don't know. I just think we're very reactive. And now that we have, you know, our social warrior thumbs, it's very easy to react quickly. And I think it'll be interesting to watch how we have to redefine the social contract with these. Yeah, like how much is the production company responsible for these people's, you know, mental and physical safety or whatever it is. Like I just find it very fascinating how much negativity is spewed. Because it's not like, yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's something I've had my eye on. And so it's just like whenever there's a big explosive sort of thing like Love Island, it's always like, oh, where is this line of normal fan engagement and where is it going to settle in?
Yeah, I don't know. It's so hard because also the thing with these shows is like the reason why Love Island is such a success, the reason why people are watching it and why these people are, you know, quote unquote famous is because there is such engagement and because people have such strong feelings. So it really is a weird double-edged sword of like, yeah, if you're going to go on this show, you want big reactions because that's how people are going to want, like, figure out who you are. But then also you're going to have to maneuver those big reactions. I think it's more crappy for like actors in, you know, for like Kelly Marie Tran in the Star Wars movie where she's like, I was an actress who was hired to play this role. Like, I did not write the script. I did not come up with any of this. Why are you hating on me?
Yeah.
This is...
The death threats, the like,
yes, insane.
Vicious.
Yeah.
But as the Ginny and Georgia of it all.
Yes, but as someone who got death threats for his Leonardo DiCaprio movie ranking on BuzzFeed, you know, it's like they can send you those for truly no reason.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't really take it seriously at all, but you know, there are kooks out there in the world who might do something. So it is terrifying.
Yeah, people just need to calm down. That's my message to the broader world is just like, tell it to your mama. Like, you know, like just find someone in real life to vent these feelings to before you get on your keyboard. And like, and really, it's just like crazy to me to think about caring that much. But yeah, a mesmerizing subculture
like,
for sure.
How much time do these people have on their hands? Like, and how, like, weird and boring and terrible is your life that this is what you devote all your time to? I have been a very big fan of some of, you know, a number of franchises, shows, whatever at this point. And the thought has never crossed my mind to do this kind of thing. Like, there are things that I feel frustrated by, but it's like, okay, there's a, you know, there's a limit to how I would respond.
So. Yeah, no, it's crazy. It's crazy out there. But anyways, did you see the Devil Wears Prada 2 casting?
Yes, I saw that, which I'm excited about enough.
It's fine. You know, it was bound to happen. They supposedly put a lot of thought into it, whatever. But it is crazy how bloated these sequels are getting. Like cast-wise, like it's like everyone wants to be in it. So suddenly you have like BJ Novak is in Devil Wears Prada 2. And
the thing with
Timothy Chalamet's sister and
yeah, but the thing with Devil Wears Prada is like there's so many people coming in and out of that it's like I think most of those people probably have a scene at most. Like,
well, no, you know, because they said that there are other cameos to be seen. Like, this is like the cast, you know. I mean, yeah, who knows how much Pauline is in it, but
it's like one of these people is a fashion designer, one of them is a, you know, because the original has a lot of random people who are sort of just like lurking around,
right? And that used to be just like non-names, but now it's these huge names who are like, yeah, sure, sign me up.
But I don't necessarily know if that means that like the movie's gonna be worse. It's just gonna mean that like, yeah, there's more famous people who pop up for one scene and you're kind of like, oh, okay, that was all. Like, Pauline Chalamet is, you know, the housekeeper at Meryl Streep's house. Like, okay, great.
That's your guess.
That'll I mean, no, hilarious. I think she's probably like an assist, some sort of fashion assistant or whatever. But I'm like, I could see BJ Novak playing like a journalist who's interviewing her in one scene for a book or something. Yeah. You know,
like I think there's a lot like, of BJ Novak. We couldn't do better. I know you've been a BJ Novak apologist, and you made me watch that movie he did. So
I was fine. Like, I don't know that I
you love BJ Novak
until you said that movie. Like
you I are in his DMs no constantly. You're like, hey man, you're doing great. Love you. Can't wait to see I'm what like, you do
BJ,
next.
BJ, will you? Could you please be in the next Star Wars movie?
Hey, at you, BJ, you are the Superman best.
Too? Have you thought of being in a remake of Doubt? Hey BJ, yeah. I would love it if you played the lead in 12 Years a Slave, the musical.
Hey, at BJ, can you tell me what's going on with your baby mama? Is that real or not? Like, fans need to know.
What's happening with Mindy Kaling and you?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean...
Yeah, no, think, Devil Wears Prada 2. Have you seen Freaky Friday yet? You have your early access stuff?
No, I have not. Because that doesn't come out until... like mid-August, I think. I have a screening scheduled for that, but I have not seen it. The thing with these sequels is I feel like they really fall into three camps as I think about them. There are the sequels that are actively bad, that is sort of like, okay, this is a cash grab and terrible, and we're all going to try to like purge it from our minds immediately. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think that that probably makes up like 40%, 50% of these.
Oh, wow. Movies. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Then there are the sequels that I think are not bad, but just sort of like do not exist in the cultural zeitgeist. Like Hocus Pocus 2, I thought was a completely fun movie. Okay, no one remembers it. It has no cultural cachet whatsoever. Like, I don't think anybody is talking about Hocus Pocus 2 ever, even people who loved the original Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
And then and that probably makes up another, like, I don't know, 30, 40% of these. It's very rare that you get a sequel that is actually good and is doing something interesting. Like a Top Gun Maverick kind of thing.
I knew you were going to say it. Another favorite.
And everybody is always clawing after like that kind of thing. And because we've had a couple of success stories, that's why we keep getting all of these sequels. And I think that this Devil Wears Prada 2, it seems prime to be one of those forgettable middle of the pack movies. Because I just don't know. I mean, you're not going to be more iconic than the original. And I don't know where those characters sort of go.
Yeah, it's like so uninteresting to me.
Their vibe is going to be, and how they would interact. Because theoretically, at the end of the original, like Anne Hathaway isn't working in fashion anymore, and Meryl Streep is like sort of old and potentially retiring. So to get that story now, 15 years later or 20 years later, it's like, what are these characters doing? Because they're none of them would be in anywhere close to the same role that they were in for the original. But I think the fun part of the original was the sort of like boss assistant dynamic, and nobody is going to be an assistant to anybody unless it's a new character, in which case I don't want that story. So
well, that's the thing, is it's like, obviously, sequels have always been a thing. Like, that's common, whatever. You know, you get Karate Kid, you get Karate Kid 2. You get Rocky, you get Rocky 2. Like, it's not a new thing, but there is something especially soulless feeling about the amount of these that are churned out, and especially that are churned out a decade after the fact. Like, I think that's where my hangup has been. It's like, okay, so these studio execs literally just can't think of anything new. So they're going back through this, like, old catalog to do these like sort of fan servicey, lazy, like let's get a dollar in the bank sort of experiences, like the what's the Sister Witch movie with Sandra Bullock and
Practical Magic.
Yeah, Practical Magic, a great movie. I love Practical Magic, but it's like, why are we getting a Practical Magic 2 30 years after the fact? Like, I It's just, yeah, I think that's where my hangup is these sort of like late to the party sequels that directly involve everyone from the original. Top Gun Maverick had sort of the same question mark, but it was very clear that the cast was going to be like fully different, if only because of circumstance, unfortunately. So yeah, I don't know. I just have like sort of a question mark around these. They just feel kind of desperate and greedy and kind of okay, yeah. But you're right. Sometimes a sequel, even late to bloom, can surprise you.
I mean, I think it always just depends on the writing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how that is going to work in this case. But they're shooting, so I guess it will probably come out next year. So we'll know before too long how it works. I think something that I am even more skeptical about is this Harry Potter reboot that they announced started shooting today.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, again, I know that I'm on only one specific side of Twitter, but I feel like I have not seen any sort of excitement for this from anybody.
There's definite excitement. There's definite excitement from like conservative.
I know that there is, but I'm just like, I think for the amount of money and the amount of time and effort that this series is going to take, because, you know, it's going to be 8 years long and what I'm just sort of like, and we saw with Fantastic Beasts that they front loaded all of this stuff and they put all of this money into it. And then that franchise did so poorly that they did not even finish the movie franchise. So
But that source material was not beloved in any way close to Harry Potter.
I do understand that. But also, I think J.K. Rowling and everything were sort of less divisive at that point than they are now. Not that I think that she's going to tank this, but I think that it's not going to be the sort of like cultural juggernaut mega hit that
I love, like, your optimism.
Like, do you think that, I guess it's hard to tell because it's like, okay, how many people watch NCIS every week? Like, they watch like,
more people watch that than whatever.
Yeah. So maybe this will be the biggest thing that has ever come out on HBO. And I'm sort of like deluding myself to thinking about this.
Well, I think it's easy to envision a world where people are like, okay, well, I just want to see what it's like. And then you're swept up in it. And then you can justify it because there's so many other people beyond J.K. Rowling involved in this. And you're supporting actors and you're supporting jobs. And it's like, there's lots of ways to justify consuming media in an imperfect world. And so, yeah, if they do it well, I can see it being taken very well, especially if they distance themselves as much as possible from J.K. Rowling and continue their PR spin of like, oh, I'm not here to talk about that, like, blah, blah, blah. This is a story about heroes, blah, blah, blah. Like, I can just see a complete world where this is a very sanitary, expensive, experiential moment for a large swath of the country who grew up wishing the movies were better and now have a chance at what we've always talked about wanting, which is a full season for every book type thing.
Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, yeah, I think if it's really good, then that is a whole different story.
Yeah.
But I also think the movies, the iconography is so strong, and the actors that they got to play those roles are so incredible that I just wonder how big of a hit this is actually going to be. I don't think it's something, oh, it's going to get canceled after one season or whatever. And I think a lot of people will tune in, especially for the first season, to watch it and see what it is. But I wonder, you know, if this, will this be a White Lotus type phenomenon where it's like everybody is talking about it and everybody is watching it every week and can't wait till the next season? Or is this going to be more like a, you know, Dexter Resurrection or whatever, where it's kind of like, okay, yeah, the fans like it and numbers, people are watching it. Yeah, or like, and just like that kind of a vibe where people are like, okay, you know, I mean, that's worse. But I just am intrigued by what the response to this is going to be, because I think that had they made this, in 2015 or whatever, that the response would have been absolutely like deafeningly and incredible. Yeah. Cause you know, even when Cursed Child comes out and is bad, people are interested. You know, it's like those, like people were so on board at that period. And I think there was a phase where you could really just like print money with Harry Potter stuff, but they had to keep shrinking that. I think that the Harry Potter show on Broadway is probably going to close within the next couple of years because they've now had to resort to stunt casting, which they haven't had to do. They've shortened it multiple times. Like it's not making as much money as it did previously. And I just don't think, and again, that's a worse story than Harry Potter proper, but like, I don't know.
Yeah. Ironically enough, the core fandom that was born from the books tended to be your sort of people who felt othered or people who needed an escape or were searching for community outside of family and home and you know, and so I think that has isolated a lot of the fan base. And not Harry everyone Potter, there's still a lot of people going to Harry Potter world.
Harry Potter is quintessentially millennial as well, and we have seen that millennials are the one demographic that is like been the least likely to skew conservative, so I also think that is like
well, and what's interesting is like, this book was for children. Is this show going to be for children? Like, is it?
I think it's very much going to be for children because I don't know if you saw the photo that came out today of the little boy who's playing Harry Potter, but it's like he is a tiny, tiny child. Yeah. Like, I don't know if Daniel Radcliffe was that same.
He was
like age and because I was, you know, 9 or whatever, he seemed older, but I'm like, this is such a child. Like
So then it's like, who's letting their kid watch a weekly series about Harry Potter on HBO Max?
Well, I mean, so it's interesting. The thing is, if it comes out once a year and films in that cadence, then you know they'll grow, then kids will grow up with it, which I think is how the series operates. But I don't think especially these first couple seasons will be, you know, it's not like they're gonna be necessarily like television for adults.
I think
the demographic that they're probably hoping for is like older millennials who now have kids. I kind of don't think that actually like works out in the math super well.
Because I
think that the demographic who's most likely to be Harry Potter fans are like our ages. Yeah. And I think that people our age like haven't quite, like the kids aren't quite old enough. Like I think if they waited another 5 years, then they would sort of be in that sweet spot. Exactly. But
well, who knows how long production will take.
Well, right.
Maybe it will be another 5 years. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I saw the casting and I was like, wow, they're doing it. Harry Potter.
Like what else do we have to talk about? Justin Bieber is sort of going on a Kanye West-esque mental breakdown, dropping a Christian album sort of vibe.
A Christian album?
Is it not Christian? I just sort of assumed it was Christian.
I don't know. I just assumed it was pop, just like bad pop.
I haven't listened to it. Okay, well, so actually we have no information on Justin Bieber's new album.
It might be Christian.
Please disregard. Might be Christian, might be not. Might be pop, unclear. Could be rap, could be country for all we know.
Well, let's do Love It or Hate It then.
Okay, perfect.
I watched K-pop Demon Hunters. Have you heard of this? Has this entered your?
I have heard of this. Universe. I have heard of this, and it has entered my universe in that my sort of like nerdy animated film friends have been like very excited about this, and you know, are talking about how good it is. I have not watched it, but I have heard good things.
Have you heard the music? Has that infiltrated?
No, it hasn't.
Your playlist.
But I think that's because of my Love It or Hate It, which is the new Haim album. And I've just solely been listening to that for the like past.
Yeah, very
weeks.
Different so, vibes.
Yeah.
No, K-pop Demon Hunters is an animated film released on Netflix. It's from the Sony studio, like the Into the Spider-Verse group. And it's just kind of like, it's just is this little film that could. Like suddenly everyone's talking about it. It's about a K-pop group, like a sort of Blackpink styled group of girls who also happen to hunt demons with their voices.
Oh.
Or they kind of capture them. They're tasked with blocking demons from entering our world. And the way to do that is to sing songs so catchy and poppy and beautiful that it kind of closes the doors to the demon world, basically. And so they have a secret life as demon hunters, and then they're also this huge pop star trio. And so that's very fun. And then they have the demons enter the chat when one of the demons suggests disguising themselves as a competing boy band group. And so then they go and they have these like musical offs where the demons are trying to like steal the souls of the fans, basically, through their catchy music. So all in all, it's like a very strange story on paper. And it's kind of always forever fascinating, like what captures the zeitgeist. So yeah, it's kind of like it follows a lot of familiar beats of maybe something like Frozen, where one of the K-pop girls, spoiler alert, is half demon. And so she's hiding that, and she's scared to tell the truth, and she thinks the only way she'll be accepted is if she never reveals her secret. And then, of course, you know, through the journey, it's very, very, you know, straightforward, childlike. But ultimately, I think what really captured everyone's hearts is the music. It's very catchy, very pop-tastic. And the animation is kind of that fun, punchy, Turning Red style, Into the Spider-Verse style. So I don't know. I think Netflix is hoping to make a run for obviously best animated, but also a couple of best original songs, which it's a bad year to compete when you have Sinners right there, but it is a worthy opponent in some ways.
I will be honest with you. I did not follow that plot line one bit with the demons and the singing open a portal and the
musical.
And now the half demon woman is a, anyway, I was actually at a, I'm technically not supposed to say this, but I was at a Netflix sort of like summer happy hour with all of these media people. And and they were sort of talking about K-pop. And one of the journalists was saying, you should really be pushing this for Best Picture. And I think Netflix has another animated movie that's either has come out this year or is probably coming out later that's more of a, you know, sort of
artsy
traditional animated movie. And the journalist was saying, you should be pushing this for Best Animated. Like, this is the best animated movie that has come out this year. Like, this is the thing that you should be trying to push. And because, especially as we've seen in the last few years, like, it doesn't necessarily, like, the big Disney, you know, glossy animated thing does not necessarily win. A lot of times it has been the like more weird thing, like Flo or like Boy and the Heron or whatever, that's sort of come out of nowhere to take the prize. And the Netflix rep was sort of like, you know, like kind of hemming and hawing about it a little bit. But I was sort of intrigued by that narrative sort of starting already. And I think that so far this year, we really have had very few awards type movies that have popped up in any way, shape, or form. Like, we have Sinners, obviously. There were some things at Cannes that I think will, you know, get released in the upcoming months, but we really haven't had that much. So I think that if you are K-pop and you can sort of get your name out there,
K-pop demon hunters,
and especially with these songs and kind of get them on people's radar, you could sort of like hold a spot for yourself before whatever comes in the fall, because there's not that many things that I think people are keeping on their radar at the moment. So
that might be a good strategy. You should get in on it too. Give me your thoughts next week.
You know, I hate watching these kinds of things at home. And I know that if it gets nominated, they'll release it in some sort of theater, have a screening or whatnot. So I'm kind of like, maybe I'll just wait for that. But speaking of women saving the world with their voice, Heim, the new album I Quit, came out, which is a breakup album. And
the band?
No. Like breakup, like with like your boyfriend sort of vibe. Okay. Did you listen to the album at all?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, rude. I loved it. I think it's absolutely incredible. It is unfortunately suffering from the Taylor Swift effect of there's probably the back half is a little bit long and there's some songs that probably could have been trimmed to make the whole thing a bit tighter. But I really love the front half, and I think that the sort of narrative through arc of the album of like, okay, you know what? It's a breakup album, but it's not like a, oh my gosh, I'm so mad at you sort of breakup album. Right. It's more of a Sagittarius vibe breakup album of like, wait, why am I dealing with you? Like, actually, you're bad. Like, I am just going to like move on to myself and my friends and not worry about this random person. It's not like crying in the car. It's sort of like, oh, wait, yeah, no, you suck. Let's go on.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I really resonated with and have been listening to the music a lot. Also, this is Heim's fourth album, and I loved their first two. Their third one was a little bit like kind of slow for me. I know some people really liked it, but it was not giving me what I needed it to. And I was worried that this album would be more in that direction, but this I feel like is more similar to what they had on their first two. And I really love kind of the upbeat energy of it. And also all of their music videos, they've been shooting with like internet boyfriend type people, and they've all been super fun. So I'm excited to see those continue. So I've been loving the Heim album.
I'm glad. You deserve it. I'm going to leave them a comment that says, thank you for helping my, my good friend Matt get through his cancer diagnosis and Heim forever, and you deserve all the love you get, and I'm gonna spread positivity through that through the internet.
And then I'm gonna go on all the Love Island contestants profiles and say, die, bitch.
No.
I wish you'd never been born. I've never seen the show, but you seem like a terrible person.
You're fugly as hell. Inside and out. Your mom would be black.
You look like a cow who's turned inside out and had their organs hanging out of their face.
Oh, it's so sad.
Listening to Heim while wandering around Europe really also... I love when you have an album that like is connected so much to a time in your life. And I think that this dropping like literally the second day I was on vacation and then listening to it so much that entire time period will forever cement this in my mind with this trip to Europe, which I love. So
that's beautiful.
Very excited about that.
Yeah. I love that.
Well, I think that's everything for our pop culture roundup. We'll be back on Thursday to discuss Superman and the DC universe that James Gunn is launching, which I am very intrigued to talk about. I have a lot of thoughts. I have a lot of questions, opinions about this. Did you watch the movie already?
I bet you're in the super dogs comments being like, you're fucking ruining this film for me. I fucking hate dogs.
This is a very dog forward movie, which I have lots of thoughts about that as well.
You have a treatise ready for the DMs. You're just going to eviscerate that poor CGI dog.
Ugh. But but you saw the movie?
I saw the movie, yeah. Okay. I have thoughts too.
Okay.
Mainly about how some tall people don't seem tall, because this man seemed very tall, you know? But we can save it. I'll talk about my tall theory.
How tall is he?
He's 6'3¾", he said.
Who's a tall person who doesn't seem tall?
Well, like, I don't know. Like Glenn Powell, I guess, or even someone like Nicholas Holt. Like, it's like they're not big, but he just looks really tall.
Yeah. Interesting. There are people who just have shorter energy or taller energy. Yeah. And I think a lot of it has to do with their head shape and their sort of build.
Interesting.
And how their build like their proportions.
Yeah.
I think there's some people who sort of seem squatty. So even if they're tall, because their like head is rounder or whatever, they seem like they're shorter. Where I think there's some people who have kind of like a tall person's build, but it's just shrunk. So like they look tall in photos and stuff, even when they're not, just because they look like their proportions are correct. Like they have tall people proportions versus short people proportions.
Right. And you're an authority on this because you are famously 6'2".
Me?
Six foot four. What do you say on the dating apps?
I'm like, are you joking? I'm like, I am 5'11". I am nowhere near being 6 foot.
I can't imagine. I actually don't know if I've ever encountered in the flesh, had a conversation with someone over 6 feet. Now I'm trying to think. I guess I've seen a couple of 1,000%
have had so many. Like Tim, who we worked with, was like 6'3".
Okay. 6'3". Okay, yes. We're going to have to text him and check. No way. I don't remember this. I'm trying to picture.
There's lots of people who are six. Like, that is, it is, I'm sure that
I just don't talk to a lot of dudes, you know? So that's part of it. Cuts down on my conversations.
You went to college with dozens.
No. Mormons are famously suffering in the height department for men. So sorry to all BYU grads listening, but chances are they are not over 6 foot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, on that note, we will hold more commentary until tomorrow, but thank you. And we'll be back on Thursday with another episode. Talk to you later. Bye.